good evening. At this time, Mel, K2KEY, and Dick, K2RIW, begin TechNet number 1242 of the series of TechNets that began way back in September of 1982. What is that, almost 26 and a half years ago. Main purpose of the TechNet is education, entertainment. We amateurs gather at this time and teach each other how to get more enjoyment out of this fairly complicated hobby of ham radio, wireless technology, computers. There's quite a lot to learn. The books only give you a little bit of the information. The schools only give you a little bit of the information. If you want a person who really understands wireless technology, you hire a ham radio operator. They're the guys who live it, breathe it, touch it, understand it. By hands-on experience, they find out what works and what doesn't work. You listen to the TechNet people describing their individual experiments, their successes, and sometimes failures. And from that, we find out how to do it better. A person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in might sound like this. KE2EJ, Eric, and yes. Do we have any check-ins? Give me your call letters and name at this time.
N2GOT, Howard, no.
W2IGH, Hugo, yes.
AI4NIL, no questions, just listening.
CGO, Diane, no.
WS2N, Paul, with a no. Good evening, Dick.
KC2MDP, Steve, no questions at this time. KC2SHQ, Tony, no.
KC2TLL, listening, no. Name is NARS.
So far, we've got Howard with a no, Joe with a no, IGA with a yes, I think it was Augie, Diane with a no, let's see, Steve with a no, Tony with a no. Have I skipped anyone? Give me a call letters and name and a yes or a no at this time.
Yes, sir, KI4NIL, the name is Frank, no questions.
Think that was IGH, IGH, India Golf Hotel, Hugo.
Very fine, Hugo. Can't read my own writing is the problem. Okay, IGH. One last call. Anyone else, particularly with a yes, give me your call letters at this time.
KC2AE, Joe, yes.
KC2TLL, no. Name is NARS.
Okay, we got Joe with a yes and Hugo with a yes. Let's start up with Hugo. W2IGH. Hugo, haven't heard from you in quite a long time. What you been doing? Quite a bit of time that you show back up here. You got it, Hugo. W2IGH, K2RIW, the second half.
Okay, Dick, I want to say good evening to you. Yes, it's been some time, but I still listen to you all the time. And while I'm not checking in, I listen late and so forth. And I think there are many people that just listen and don't check in. So yeah, I usually have quite a big audience. Now, what I wanted to ask you is I originally had a G5RV, and then I tried to put it up, and I didn't have enough room to put a full-fledged G5RV, which I guess is around approximately 102 feet or so. And so I cut it down to a junior size, which is approximately half the size. And I put it up, and it did not work very well. I mean, it didn't really work very good. And I found a way of putting up the G5RV. I found a way to put it up full size. So I put whatever I cut off back on there. Except for the ladder line, I left the ladder line, the way it was, although I still have the additional beat. And it works like a charm now. I am only using 100 watts, but I get all over Europe and everything with good results with 100 watts. What I wanted to ask you is, I left the ladder line to the specification of the junior. Now, I wonder whether, what your opinion is, if I should put the total ladder line on there, whether it makes a difference. I don't believe it makes a difference, but I just wanted to get your opinion, Dick. So, back to you.
Yeah, my opinion, I'm going to be asking Mel and anyone else who's got opinions on this one, too, is that I don't think you need the full-size ladder line. Most antennas built out of reasonable materials where you don't intentionally put resistive materials and lossy materials in the transmission line or the antenna. As long as we're talking about antennas made out of essentially lossless materials and mounted at a high enough altitude where ground absorption is not creating a terrific amount of loss, if you fulfill those criteria, then the only mechanism by which you can get loss in the antenna is due to standing wave ratio. If a whole lot of energy is reflected back to the transmitter, and if you're not using an antenna tuner. Well, most people with a G5RV do use an antenna tuner. They particularly need it on 10 meters. So even with the antenna tuner, which means that even the reflected energy gets re-radiated back out the transmission line and eventually goes out the antenna. So if by way of the use of your antenna tuner and your junior size ladder line, if that combination is giving you low standing wave ratio, then most likely 90 some odd percent of the 100 watts you're using is being radiated by that antenna. And if that's the truth, and if you're not running into a whole lot of common mode RF energy back into the shack, and you'd know about that, you know, the D104 mic would be biting you on the lip when you get close to it and so on. You'd have a bunch of clues of that. And there's ways you can make a measurement if you really want to know. From everything you're describing to me, Hugo, it sounds to me like you've got an efficient antenna, and the only thing left by which you can improve its efficiency is to either mount it higher if you had the ability to, or make that the driven element of a Yagi if it needed more gain in one direction. I think you're getting your money's worth from everything I'm hearing. So I don't think you have to make any further changes. Now, that doesn't mean you should sit back and rest on your laurels, because we amateurs like tinkering with antennas. You might want to put up a second antenna at right angles to the first one. That's on the assumption you got enough trees and ways of mounting it, and a switching arrangement so you can flip back and forth between the two. And you might even want to someday experiment with a vertical antenna.
Repeater, time out.
As I'm starting to say, you might even want to experiment with a vertical antenna, because you're going to find out, as Mel has discovered, that quite often when you get a QSB fade, and the signal seems to fade out, and you think the signal is skipping over you, it's really a vertically polarized signal coming into your horizontal antenna. The ionosphere is continuously shifting its Faraday rotation of polarization. So you're going to want to tinker with some other antennas when you've got the time. These are some of my opinions. I'm going to pass it over to Mel, who I think a number of his guys in the Kings County Radio Club have built G5RVs. I'll bet you they've done it, the junior version, the version with and without the ladder line. And I think the ladder line is not a super important component. But let's see what Mel's got to say about that. K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hey, good evening all. This is K2KEY. Well, first of all, let's talk about the G5RV at its beginning and where it came from. The G5RV was designed by Louis Barney in England. And he basically wanted an antenna that would go between 3.5 and 30 megs. His original design was for approximately a flat wire, 102 feet long, and fed with a length of 75 ohm twin lead. About an original design called for a piece of twin lead approximately 34 feet long. I mean, this is the classic original design of the G5RV. The Can they be installed in many cases, the G5RV, into like an inverted V dipole arrangement? Now, because the original design was for 70, used that 75 ohm twin lead, he made it so that in those days, of course, in the 1930s, 40s, that you would put this into a balanced input of a tuner. Mostly at that time, they were, or at that time, link coupling to the final amplifier coils were popular. In other words, they didn't use what we now call pi sections. It was used link coupling. Now, that is the original concept. Now, what has happened, of course, let me let it drop. What has happened over the years, we've gotten used to using coax cable. So the insertion of a balun into the system so that we go from the ladder line to the balun, then to the 50 ohm coax cable. Now what you're supposed to do, if I mean you want to stick to the classic design and call it a G5RV, unless you want to start calling it something else, is to stay with the 34 feet of 75 ohm twin lead, Dick, over.
Well, let me ask you this question, Mel. I'll bet you some of the guys you know or have talked to either didn't put in the ladder line, they just ran the coax cable maybe with a balancing device right at the antenna, but they ran the coax cable all the way up to the antenna, in which case, what major disadvantage do they suffer that you know about? Back to you, Mel.
Okay, a number of the complaints were that the antenna did not anymore have a so-called characteristic impedance. It began, you're really, I guess, changing some kind of topography of the antenna because the whole idea of the G5RV was basically, to cover the 3.5 to 30 megs, and a number of people would complain, especially that it didn't work too well anymore on 3.5 or especially on 10 meters. Of course, with a tuner, you can fix the thing up. However, what is suggested on G5RVs by people that have really used them extensively, that you can droop the ends up to 1/6 of the total length of the ends can be drooped down. But if I could say, I guess if you want to stay with the original design, to stay with the ladder line, Dick, over.
Okay, a traditionalist who really wants the original antenna will put in the ladder line. But in Hugo's case, where he is getting reasonably low standing wave ratio, I don't get alarmed on standing wave ratio until you hit something like 3-1. I know that many of our transmitters, solid-state transmitters with no-tuned finals, will start tripping out at something like 1.8-1. They'll start lowering in power or completely stop transmitting. But with an antenna tuner, you can bring that down as long as you're using low-loss feed line. I'm not so convinced that the ladder line makes a big difference. So, as you can see, Hugo, you're getting two different opinions. I'm getting the impression that Mel would put in the ladder line. I think your performance is so darn good from everything you described to us, I don't think it's required. But if someday you do decide to make the change just to see what the difference is, please come back and tell us what difference you've seen, if any. I don't think you're going to see much, but that's an opinion. I haven't done it. But from the measurements you've told us, it sounds like you're getting 90-some-odd% of what you paid for, so to speak. Okay, W2IGH, K2LIW. You got it, Hugo.
Dick, one more thing.
Well, hold on, Hugo. Go ahead, Mel.
I just thought I remembered seeing something about replacing the ladder line with coax. And here I found it. I know I've seen that just recently. That was with replacing of the ladder line with 50 ohm coax on several amateur radio bands, it is found that this does not work well, especially on 14 megahertz. In other words, 20 meters, it will not work well, G5RV, that they suggest sticking to the original Louis Bonney design. Over.
Well, let me ask you this, Mel. The difference between 50-ohm coax and 70-ohm twin lead, when the 50-ohm coax has the right kind of a balancing device on the end of it, like a W2AD, is it, I think, a one-to-one balancing device, that makes it act like 50-ohm twin lead. And 50-ohm twin lead versus 70-ohm twin lead, that's a very small difference in standing wave ratio, particularly with an antenna tuner. So is it possible that the guys who were not so happy with the coax made direct connection with the coax and jumped over using that balun at the end? What do you think, Mel? K2KEY? K2RIW?
Roger, I think that's what happened. You know, they tried to eliminate the balun. They went directly from the and in other words, they basically made a foreshortened dipole trying to stay with the original 102-foot length, but at the same time using it on the frequency that he originally designed it for, 3.5 to 30 megs. I could see that that antenna may have some problems, especially on the 3.5 megahertz, Dick, because I assume that he figured in that 34-foot length of twin line to sort of give some kind of a lengthening effect to the 102-foot flat top. I think that's how he most likely was able to load 3.5 a lot better because of the low, the high efficiency of the, you know, using solid wire. Over.
I hear you. I'm a little bit skeptical on that one. I'll admit that when it comes to feet-wise, it does seem to make sense. But the twin lead cable, by definition, has two wires that are so close together that they are acting like a thoroughly shielded structure. In other words, I could take 70-ohm twin lead and use it in whatever way I want to, and then put another piece of outer coax shield around the twin lead so that it shields the twin lead, and once I readjust the impedances accordingly, I would see no difference in radiation. So yeah, there's 32 feet of twin lead, and a naive person would look at that on a schematic diagram and saying that I'm adding 32 feet to the length of his 102, and it becomes 134 altogether, a normal half-wave dipole length. But that's a non-radiating section, so it's not really adding to the antenna. When it comes to twin lead versus coax, let me show you what's going on here. Many guys, for simplistic reasons, will take coax cable, connect it directly to the center insulator of a dipole on whatever band they're using. The center conductor goes to one side, the shield goes to the other. And a dipole antenna, in the ideal world, is a balanced device. Yeah, the dipole, if it's resonant, acts something like 70 ohms of resistive impedance. And if you want to go one step further with the schematic diagram, it acts like a 35-ohm resistor from the right side to ground and a 35-ohm resistor from the left side to ground. And those two 35-ohms are in series, and therefore the antenna presents 70 ohms. But it tries to create a balance. Therefore, when you put twin lead there, where twin lead properly fed, the right-hand side has a positive voltage, the left-hand side of the twin lead has a negative voltage, at one half of the cycle, and the other half of the cycle, that voltage is reversed, but it's a balanced condition. Whereas with coax cable, you'd like to have no voltage on the shield of the coax and only the voltage between the center conductor and the inside surface of that shield. So as such, when you connect coax cable directly to a dipole, the dipole will automatically feed some RF energy back down on the outside of the coax cable. This is not a disaster, but now your coax cable, your transmission line, let me drop, becomes part of the antenna. And depending on the length of that transmission line, the system can be very successful or not so successful. Whether that transmission line radiates in a way that you like, or happens to be a particular length where the current, there's voltage on it, but not much current flows, and therefore not much radiation takes place. There's various lengths of coax cable will now make a change. And this is one of the reasons why some guys will change the length of their transmission line, and even good standing wave ratio meters will show a change in the standing wave ratio of the antenna. It's because the amount of energy feeding down the outside is or isn't hitting resonance. That's another one of the complications. Quite often, a guy will change the length of his transmission line, and if it's an ideal system with no current flowing down the outside of the cable, under those conditions, there should be no change in the VISWR when you change the length of the line. But in the case of a radiating line, yes, you will see some change. So, as you can see, there's a bunch of pros and cons here. We don't have a nice, clean answer for it, but everything you're telling me with the measurements you've made, Hugo, tells me it's working. And so it would be an interesting experiment for you to add the ladder line and see what happens. My guess is you're going to see very little improvement. Mel thinks you're going to see more improvement. And if we probe the guys who have got the G5RV, and there's thousands of them out there, you're going to get various different answers. It's not an easy one you've asked us here, Hugo. You didn't get a great answer, but the price was right. 72 IGH, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah. Okay, Dick. Well, thank you very much for the discussion and everything. And I sort of agree with you, but you made some very reasonable statements which showed up. First of all, I raised when I changed from the junior to the overall, the full length, I raised it also about anywhere between 5 and 10 feet. And I have it, one leg is going east and west and the other one north and south. And it works very well on 20 meters. And I get the SWR very close one-to-one, so there's no problem adjusting it for the very low SWR. And what I'll try and do, I'll run an experiment. It works on 80 meters. I think I might get some improvement on 80 meters. That's why I mentioned 20 meters works fine as a charm, and 40 and 10, even 10 meters is fine. But on 80 meters, it's also okay because I even run a net on 80 meters. But I thought maybe it would improve it possibly if I added that extra line. So what I'm going to try to do experiment with is I might add the line and see if it makes any changes. Because I have the line left. I mean, whatever I cut up, I'll just solder it back on and put the coax on it. That's not a big change. And I can experiment and I'll let you know if there is any changes, any obvious changes that may occur. Thank you very much, you and Dick. Very nice talking to you. And I'll turn it back to you, Dick.
One quick question I got for you, Hugo. Are you using an antenna tuner when you talk about getting a rather low VISWR on all of those bands, standing wave ratio on all those bands? That's with the use of an antenna tuner, or are you one of those lucky guys that's getting a low VISWR even with no antenna tuner? Over to you, Hugo.
No, I have an antenna tuner. I have an MFJ, but it's not a roller conductor tuner. It's one of those step tuners. But it works very good. It works very well. I'm using a tuner on all the bands, really. Back to you, Dave.
Okay.
More comment here. I just looked up another article on the G5RV, Dick.
Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, these are results of some people testing of the G5RV. Just happened I came across, I was sorting out a lot of antenna information. I happened to come across this, so I happen to remember where I saw it last. One of the comments is here that one of the analysis that was done, since they consider the G5RV antenna system as balanced, it is desirable to use balanced transmission line to feed it. The most desirable type is a line of 75 ohm transmitting twin lead. The use of straight coax 52 ohm line should be avoided because this coax does introduce some unbalance. It is somewhat tolerable but will lower the antenna's efficiencies, especially on the outer edges of the antenna, particularly on 3.5 megahertz. That's the comment on why they suggest the 75 ohm transmitting line because of this experiment. Over.
Very fine, Mel. The information you just read us, can you give us the reference? Was that a technical correspondent in QST magazine, for instance? Back to you, Mel.
Yeah, technical correspondent. This was removed from CQ magazine. Let's see, this is proceedings of CQ and things and other things like that, 1999, Dick, when this was in CQ magazine, over.
Do you know what issue, Mel?
Let me see if I can find the issue. I don't know. You know, these are like snippets that come out of these things. And September issue.
Okay, so if we want to go back and read the specifics, September 1999, CQ Amateur Radio, most likely. Okay. Please come back, Hugo, with anything you find, if you make any further changes, whether it gets better, worse, or whatever. Your situation is quite similar to what an awful lot of other guys run into, and I guarantee they want to hear about it. Next person who signed in with a yes was Joe. I think it was Kilo 2 Alpha Echo, K2AE, but I'm not quite sure because that's a listing for the Schenectady Amateur Radio Club in Schenectady, New York, and maybe that's where Joe is located. K2AE, question mark. You got it, Joe. K2RIW. My name is Dick.
Hey, Dick. How are you? How's everything going? It's Alpha Charlie 2, Alpha Echo. We spoke last week, and my name is Joe, and I'm definitely not in Schenectady. I'm in Gravesend, Brooklyn, New York. My question was, well, actually, it was kind of a comment and a question, and part of it was already answered, through the talk about the dipole. So basically, I was building an antenna. I actually built it successfully. Made my own balun based on Jerry Sevick, I believe. Read a lot of information on him and how to wind it, and I bought toroids from online. And actually, the antenna is working better than what I even expected, and I was wondering why it's working even lower than what it should be, because it should only work from 20 up, but I'm getting absolutely fantastic results on 40 and on 80, and I don't know, I'm having a little problem understanding that. My knowledge of antennas is okay, but I wouldn't say it's an advanced knowledge yet, seeing I am so new to the hobby. I'm just basically following, some formats and formulas that I basically found online and, you know, through the amateur community. Back to you, Dick. AC2AE.
Very fine, Joe. Sorry I got the prefix of your call. Didn't write it down fast enough when people were signing in. Give me a full description of the antenna. You're using Jerry Civic's recommended balun with a toroidal ferrite or whatever material for the impedance match. Quite possibly that's located right at the antenna. Is it a dipole antenna? How many feet long on each side? How many feet in the air? Give us a little more information about the antenna, and then I'll try to make some guesses as to what I think is taking place. Over to you, Joe.
Okay. The antenna is a vertical antenna. I made that of PVC tubing and a steel whip. The total length of the antenna itself from the tip of the steel whip to the base of the antenna is 15 feet 6 inches exactly. And basically what I'm using for radials on the bottom or for ground plane, I'm using 4 16 foot pieces of full gauge wire, and then I'm using two more 12 feet pieces of wire for the 56 elements. I plan on putting some more on this, you know, the more the better, the more it sees. I don't know, just a little confused, and I'm not sure why it's working so low. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm very happy it is. I'm happy I'm getting the reports that I am getting, but just not too sure what's going on there. Back to you.
Okay, I've got a little bit more description of the antenna. The balun itself is it a transformer with a certain number of turns on the primary winding and a certain number of turns on the secondary winding, all wound on the same toroidal core? Give me a little bit of a description of that one, Joe. Go ahead.
KQ2QIW to mobile.
Okay. I don't know if I'm supposed to pick him up. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But, it's seven turns on the left, seven on the right. It's a circular toroid, ferrite, powder ferrite core. It's a, if I remember correctly, a 140-43. And I just, according to, like, the directions, you know, wound it and wired it correctly and put it into a nice little box and made it look all, you know, nice and stuff. And that's basically at the bottom of the antenna. I have it actually bolted into the PVC. And like I said, I have the ground. I also have the ground with the tilting attached. I forgot to tell you that. I still have I have a nice piece of steel up there that I grounded into. And I have that as well as the radio hooked into that too. So maybe that's doing some.
Okay, I also heard KC2QIW, who I think is Bill Mobile. Bill, are you signing in because you've got information on this particular subject? And is your new call W2ANQ? Over to you, Bill.
Negative. No, this is KC2QBEC Yankee Whiskey. Name is Joe. I haven't been on this net in a long time. I'm in the mobile, and I'm just checking in and supporting the net, and I'll wait my turn. I just got in the car like a couple minutes ago, and I'll pass it over to you, QSO.
Okay, you normally live in Harrison, New York. Is that true, Joe?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, Harrison, New York.
Okay. Alrighty. From what you've just described to us, Joe number one, AC2AE, is a quarter wave ground plane on what I would call 20 meters. It's actually almost 16 feet long. It's a half wave on 10 meters. So on 20 meters, I can see how that antenna is going to work very well. On 40 and 80 meters, that antenna is going to be highly capacitive. However, if you've got a low enough loss transmission line, a big enough ballooning device, and a stoochy enough antenna tuner, you can make it work very well. But you've got to be a little bit careful now about working very well. When you have only four ground plane radials 16 feet long, that's a good beginning for a ground plane, and plus the other two that are 12 feet long, 12 and a fraction. That's a good beginning ground plane for 20 meters and 10 meters. When it gets down to 40 meters, it's getting a little bit shy. As such, a certain amount of the RF energy coming out of that antenna is being coupled into the local earth, and is heating up that local earth and wasting some of your energy, but that's not going to show up as standing wave ratio. However, depending on who you've talked to on 80 and 40 meters, if you're getting reasonably good reports because you live in a good location, you're a good operator, you're doing it during a time when the sunspot cycle or when the ionosphere is in good shape, you may be making a very good very good QSOs, very good contacts. One of the things that's hard to believe, and this is one of the mysteries of radio, is that, let me drop, I can take a dipole in free space, starting off as half wave long. It will give me 2.14 decibels of gain over a theoretical isotropic antenna. I say theoretical because nobody's really got an isotropic antenna, but it's a nice mathematical model. An isotropic antenna is a little bit like a light bulb in the middle of a spherical room. It gives off light equally in all directions. That's an isotropic antenna. So it makes a good comparison. And then a dipole has got sort of a donut pattern. In other words, if you could see the pattern coming out of the dipole in free space, it would look like a donut with the wire going down the center of the hole of the donut. It gives you the strongest signal broadside to the wire, and it gives you a very little signal off the ends of the wire. That's where the hole in the donut is, if you know what I mean. So that donut pattern is not spending any time sending energy off to the tips of the dipole, but it's sending all the energy broadside to the dipole all the way around, So a vertical one of those is radiating all of its signal in all directions out to the horizon, vertically polarized. And so that's where the 2.14 dB of gain is coming from. You're doing some focusing on the horizon, and you're nulling the energy that would have gone straight up and straight down. If I take that vertically polarized dipole that I just described in free space and made it smaller and smaller, its capacitive reactance will go up very fast. The antenna engineering handbook, chapter 4, has got a nice set of curves that'll show you exactly what impedance you'll get as you make the dipole smaller. Common sense would lead you to believe that as the dipole gets smaller and smaller, you physically made it smaller on whatever band you're operating on, you would think the effective area of the antenna would go down. Good common sense. Not true. Not true at all. If I can live with the high reactive impedance, the high capacitive reactance I get from a dipole that's much too small, in other words, I've got low loss in my feed line, and I've got a real good antenna tuner that's got a wide dynamic range, and I can keep resonating that system. And that's what happens with radiation. If you want to radiate a signal, you must resonate the radiating system. By radiating system, I mean the final stage of the transmitter, the tank circuit, the PI tank circuit in the transmitter, if it's got one.
Repeater, timeout.
I'm starting to list the things of the radiating system. The final stage of the transmitter, the tank circuit, the resonating circuit of the transmitter, the antenna tuner, the feed line, and the imbalancing device, if you got one, and the antenna. If you resonate that total system, it will radiate well. And so, once you've resonated in that system, and if you've built it out of low-loss materials, of the 100 watts you might be generating, 99 watts is going to be radiated into space, even though the antenna is too small. And whatever effective capture area a full half-wave dipole has when it's receiving, it's hard to believe that when you make an extremely small dipole, you have 90% of the exact same area. A infinitesimal size dipole, properly resonated, only loses half a dB of gain, a little bit less than half a dB of gain, compared to a full-out half-wave dipole in free space. That's a hard one to believe. I will admit that when the dipole becomes very small physically and you re-resonate it with your antenna tuner, it becomes very narrow band. You QSY 50 KC up the band, and you've got to do a lot of retuning of the antenna tuner. The instantaneous frequency bandwidth becomes kind of small. But with a modern antenna tuner, you can live with that. So making an antenna too small, and that's what you're talking about when this 16-foot, 4-inch long whip is being used on 40 meters and 80 meters, it's much too small. But if your balun can take it, the extra high voltage it's running because of the high reactance, and if your antenna tuner can take it, my guess is you're getting 90% of the efficiency you should be getting. Let me ask you this, Joe, number one, and that is, have you asked guys what kind of signal strength you're getting? Have you made contact on 40 and 80 meters with that antenna? What do people say? I'm beginning to think there's a modern good chance you're going to tell me that you make QSOs and everyone says it's working fine, but when you describe the antenna to them, they probably say, gee, that shouldn't work, and it is working, and we're going to explain a little bit more about that as time goes on. Back to you, Joe. AC2AE, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, that's definitely, I made four contacts on 40 and one on 80, and that's exactly what they're telling me. They're telling me that I'm hitting them with 5x9, someone out in Kentucky, I was hitting with a 10 over, and basically when I start describing the antenna to them, they basically start telling me, wow, they can't believe it. One gentleman actually was using a horizontal dipole, 253 feet. He had it stretched across, and he basically asked me what I was doing, because he was interested in the antenna. And I told him, you know, how tall it was, the length and the wire and stuff, and he was just very interested in the toroid and how I wrapped it and stuff. I tell you, I don't know if I should be transmitting down there. I mean, I'm getting with a tuner. I'm using an MFJ 949D tuner to get the SWR down. Straight out on 40 when I tried it, it's just much too high. It's over a 2. Actually, it's over 2.8. But when I'm on 20 meters with it straight out, going direct on the coax, it's like 1.5, 1.8 on the higher parts, and on the lower parts, it actually goes lower to like about 1.4, 1.5. So it is jumping a bit without the tuner on 20. On 10, it's actually pretty high on 10. I've got about 1.8 on 10 all around. And it is transmittable, but I don't like to use that, so I always throw the tuner in line and bring the SWR or the forward power up and the reflective power down. So I don't know. I don't know if I'm really doing the right thing. I am making contacts. It is exciting. I am loving it. But I am putting the dipole up real shortly, hopefully within the next week or so. So hopefully we'll see what that one does for the lower band for me. Was it? I'm sorry. What was W2RIW? AC2AC.
Are you running approximately 100 watts, Joe? Go ahead.
W2OS, normally checking.
Bob recognized. Joe, are you running around 100 watts?
Yes. I'm actually, when I tune up, when I'm actually checking the SWR, yeah, I'm checking it at about 100 watts, slightly under. When I'm actually talking on sideband, I never quite really hit over about 50, maybe 60 watts.
Yeah, one of the questions you asked is, are you doing the right thing? The answer is definitely yes. You're not hurting anything. You're not hurting your transmitter. You're not hurting your antenna tuner. You're not hurting your antenna. You're not creating interference on the band. You're not hurting any people. Not to worry. Any antenna that gives you reports and people give you an answer is a good antenna. It's like a pilot will say, any landing that you survive is a good landing. Well, any antenna that doesn't burn up equipment and doesn't annoy people is a good antenna. You're not doing anything wrong. It's a bit unusual. The average guy with a antenna that is roughly 16 feet long as a vertical ground plane wouldn't have the nerve of even trying to use it on 40 meters and 80 meters. And they're overly limiting themselves when they do that. Everyone believes that an antenna must be exactly the right length for that particular band to behave well, and that's not true. As Mel and I and others are discovering when we discuss this subject on our TechNet, that antennas that are very wrong in size can work extremely well. And we're really coming back and repeating history. In the early days of ham radio, a random length wire was an extremely popular antenna. An NZEP antenna was an extremely popular antenna. If you had a quarter acre of property and you had a certain number of feet across the diagonal dimension of the property, you threw up that amount of wire, fed one end of it with the equivalent of an antenna tuner, and in 1920, that was ham radio, and it worked very well. Somewhere in the middle of the 50s and 60s, somebody came to the impression that an antenna is only going to work well if it's got a great big sign on it saying this antenna is exactly 16 point something feet long, designed for the 28 megacycle band, and you're not supposed to use it anywhere else. So people started coming up with beliefs like that. Definitely overly restrictive. With a modern antenna tuner that's got enough range to it and a ballon that's got enough hair on its chest that it can take a slightly high standing wave ratio, no problem. So keep on doing it. When you put up that dipole and you start running comparisons, it will be interesting. And on some days the dipole is going to behave better, and some days the dipole is going to behave not as well, because the dipole will be horizontal and your ground plane is going to be vertically polarized. And as we're slowly discovering, what Mel and I have been passing out the word for some time is that we all as amateurs keep forgetting the fact that the
repeater, time out.
We keep forgetting the fact that the ionosphere is a plasma. That means it's slightly conducting medium. It's made up of individual positive and negatively charged particles. That's what a plasma is. And it's got a magnetic field from the Earth mixed into it. And any plasma with a magnetic field at HF frequencies will twist the polarization a considerable number of times. When it goes from point A to point B, as long as that signal is going through that ionosphere, it's being twisted. So there's a certain percentage of the time when you launch a vertical signal, and the guy that's listening to you is getting a horizontal signal, and everything in between. So once you've got a horizontal antenna and a vertical antenna, and you can switch back and forth between the two, you'll discover that some of the QSB fades that you get on one antenna are a non-fade on the other antenna, because the signal is not hopping over you, it's just hitting your antenna cross-polarized, and a pure vertical antenna with a horizontal signal is not going to give you much of a response, and vice versa. So, when it comes to the wire we put up in our backyards, strung in the trees and across the towers as inverted Vs and as slopers and whatever, and pure vertical dipoles fed at the bottom end, which is an unpopular antenna, simply because people haven't gotten used to it. Well, once you try these various antennas in the backyard, and you got a switching arrangement where you can flip from one to the other, you'd be amazed how much fun you can have. And the next step beyond that is to start feeding them in combinations. Use a power divider and feed half the power to one antenna and half the power to the other, with and without phase shifting. And you can build a phased array, and you can electronically steer the beam in your backyard with simple wire antennas. It's a whole area that hasn't been tapped into. So you've done some good experiments. Don't feel guilty about it. Even if the guys you talk to say that shouldn't work, under your breath you can laugh at them, Joe. What you've got is working. They're hearing it. And who cares if they think it shouldn't work? Mother Nature is teaching us something else. Back to you, Joe, for any other comments on this. And as you do these further experiments, please come back and tell us what you find with your dipole and the other antennas you're going to be putting up. That's the main thing we amateurs do. We hang a lot of antennas in the backyard because that's the part we can really experiment with. A modern-day ham on HF frequencies doesn't build his transmitter and doesn't build his receiver anymore for a whole lot of good reasons. On the microwave frequencies, we still do. But when it comes to antenna experimenting, that's where we shine. AC2.
Repeater. Timeout.
AC2, AE, to take it for any other comments. K2LIW, you got it, Joe.
Make some comments also about Jerry Civic's antennas.
Okay, Joe first and then Mel after that. You got it, Joe.
No, that pretty much, that was really good information, and I think the only thing I'm going to play with on the vertical is just keep on tweaking it and putting more radials on it. I want to see how far I can actually go like that. The dipole, I'm actually going to have fun with that. A nice long group, almost 500 feet wide. So hopefully I'll be able to get a nice 253-foot wire across it and play again with another ballon that I plan on making again, another one. But I'm very interested on what Mel has to say on Jerry Civic again, because I find Jerry Civic a very, very interesting man. Okay, and that's about it. I'm going to drop back and listen for the rest of the night. 82, 80.
Hey, Joe, run that by again. I thought I heard you say you got a nice long roof where you can hang a nice long wire on it, 500 feet long. That's what it sounded like you said. And in Brooklyn, I wonder how you did that. I must have misheard you. Over to you, Joe.
Well, maybe 500, I might be stretching it a little bit far, but the building is a double-wide building, and it basically takes up one city block from West 3rd Street to McShell Road, which turns into McDonald Avenue. So I'm actually in a six-story building, and on the roof, it's a nice flat area up on the roof. And luckily, he's a very good friend of ours, the landlord, and he allowed us to put up some antennas and stuff. And he basically gave us a key and said, just take care of the roof.
Hey, Joe, there's a whole lot of people listening to you right now that are extremely envious. You've got a very lucky situation. Most of many of the guys living in the five boroughs of New York City have got a supervisor for the building that won't let them do anything. And here you've got a landlord that says, go ahead and use the roof any way you want to. Fantastic. I hope you are appreciating that. You're a rare lucky guy, Joe. Hey, Mel, when it comes to Jerry Civic, he had a whole series of articles of electrically small vertical antennas in his backyard. And he ran a lot of experiments. And as long as you put something like 32 individual ground plane radials down onto the lawn, you can make a very small antenna produce very high efficiency, very high performance. I remember one of the pictures, he has his wife sitting under an umbrella on a beach chair on the front lawn, and the umbrella is being suspended by a very short vertical antenna. The umbrella itself was the top hat loading capacitor on the antenna. I'm sure he tells his wife not to sit there when he's transmitting, but just to show you how compact and neat the antenna was that Jerry had as one of his many experiments, and he did a lot of experiments also with various kinds of balloning devices, and discovering that if you misuse a ballon, you can create some permanent damage in the actual ferrite materials. So go ahead with your further information on this one, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
And to Arrhenio, with a possible comment about polarization.
Okay, Alex recognized, but Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
Exactly. I was just going to mention that, Jerry Civic and those experiments. Now, one of his famous experiments was the 6-foot-high, 7-megahertz vertical antenna. And he did it. He had it out on his lawn, as you said, and he used 60 radials, and he made the top hat for it. He did add that top hat. And he found that in his experiments the vertical antenna approached very much what the full-size quarter wavelength antenna, vertical antenna would do on 40 meters. The only trade-off was, he says, that the lower input impedance and lower bandwidth, that was his only really comment on it. But he used a 7-foot top hat, and he worked out extremely well on 40 meters with that configuration, Dick. He also did another experiment like that for 80 meters and used a 7-foot vertical on 80 meters, basically using the same ideas, and it worked out also quite well. So. He says he was amazed that in the final design that everything was acceptable, and that even short verticals were able to, as his comment, radiate. And
parties that are going on. There's going to be a big one here in Orlando tomorrow at Eola Park. It's supposed to be about 6,000 people, but we do have a group of about 20 people and a couple of bullhorns. We're going to go down there tomorrow. We have close to 1,000 DVDs, probably more by then, to give out with the Obama deception and all kind of other stuff. And I want to encourage people who are in Florida who are wanting to get active. Maybe, you know, this is the first time you're hearing this and you don't know where to go to. You can go to www.meetup.com/Orlando911Truth. We do a lot of stuff. And last thing, then I'll let you go, Alex. I know you got a lot to do. But we're going to have a special celebrity endorsement tomorrow. We got a life-size Barack Obama cutout we're taking to the rally with us with a speech bubble that says, "New administration, same agenda, one world government."
Well done. Well done. Good to hear from you. And again, folks are calling in going, what are solutions? The power of the people, just with the Obama deception. I mean, people are sending me videos all over the country of huge DVD copiers, which aren't even that expensive, just copying, and giving it to everybody. And it's this film's been out for a month. Tens of millions of views online for free. The thousands of DVDs we've shipped out in the highest quality being copied everywhere. It is explosive! And then we've got these giant CDN servers. And we've told listeners, PrisonPlanet.tv members, you can share it with 6 friends and family. Just tell them don't share it because then it'll bankrupt us or the servers will shut down. I got a $40,000 bill or something for the overage. Yeah, that's where the video, the film sales go right back into the servers to pay to give it out. And that's because the members, we let members give it out to like 10 people. You know, 10 people could enter the passcode and use it at any one time. And they just shared it with everybody, and it was just it really financial hardship on that end. To have done that. But that's when you know you get success, when you're, you know, using, what was it, like 90 terabytes or something for the Obama deception? Hey, Matt, what was it, 90 terabytes last month? They don't even hear me out there. 90 terabytes? Over 90 terabytes? Over 90 terabytes. For folks in IT, you know what that means. 90 terabytes. Now that's serving a video out, baby. That is serving a video out. And now, you know, it took me years just to get the money to have servers and people that could run them that can handle that. Because we're talking about 90 terabytes in a month. and $40,000. So go buy the DVDs at InfoWars.com, folks. We need the money.
You already know that drinking pure, high-alkaline pH water is the most important factor in maintaining high energy and vibrant health. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline ingredients. Using plasma pH drops is one of the best ways to make your water alkaline, to help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops per liter of water you drink to raise the pH to the ultimate level. Alkalizing water helps your body rid itself of acidic waste and increases the oxygen content of your body. Disease organisms like bacteria and cancer cannot survive in an alkaline, high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or by calling 269-216-9767. 269-216-9767 today.
In the New World Order's war against humanity.